Hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome to another episode of the Nomad of Nowhere After Show here on Rooster Teeth Reviews on AfterBuzz TV. Tonight, we are talking about Season 1, Episode 3, Trouble on Purpose. Guys, we're getting ready for a showdown, and we're breaking down the bits of backstory that we're getting for all our favorite characters, along with some Rooster Teeth news. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
As far as space westerns go, this one had a pretty rockin' theme. Katie's Trigun bias is showing.
It is. This is what happens when you let me pick the music. I go straight here,
Mark,
because I love it.
Is that what happens to you when you're in a showdown?
Yes. That's it.
Just no mercy, nonstop.
It's 11:59.
It's almost time for lunch.
Jesse, you got fired from your cover job.
Well, anyway, hey there, Rooster Teeth fans. Welcome back to the Nomad of Nowhere After Show. Tonight we are talking about Trouble on Purpose, the third episode of Season 1. Let's not waste any time. Let me go ahead and introduce my fantastic panel. To my left, Mark Donica.
Yep.
To his left, Katie Cullen, who was waiting for that guitar riff.
I absolutely was. Hi, all my buddies. And to my left,
I'm Megan Salinas. Guys, sadly, Stacy could not be here with us tonight. She sends you her love. Be sure to follow her at Stacy Shuttles on Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, we are going to be keeping an eye on the hashtag RTReviews for all of you guys watching live. Mark and Katie have you both on the live chat, so if you guys want to follow along. All right, guys. Let's talk about this episode. Initial thoughts, because I am just, this series continues to just absolutely, it doesn't cease to impress me. I am pleased as punch every time we come into the studio to talk about it.
Scarecrow of Ash versus Lawnmower Man.
Back to pleased as punch, huh?
Should just I use saying. A different descriptor to describe my joy?
No, I'd be pleased as punch if you kept using it. So, yeah, it was fun being able to see sort of the new limits of, or rather just the limits in general of what the Nomad's powers entail. And then my theory of Toth being completely invalidated by their mission today.
I mean,
she
yeah.
works so hard.
Oh, my life is terrible. My name's Toss.
Pepsi fan says Stacy locked herself in the jail with the handcuffs.
All
right,
that's pretty good.
We can neither confirm nor deny that's what happened.
I mean, and Becca Lee says the Scarecrow versus the Tin Man.
I mean, not wrong.
I like that.
Not wrong. Crow versus Ironwood.
Yeah, we're going to get that.
I would pay good money to see that. Okay. Sorry, different show. But yeah, so let's talk about Mark.
We have to do it. I saw the same one.
AJ the Edgelord says, does Ranch Hand's arm have a vibration function? That's like a deep cut.
It's like three levels of reference. That is some deep cut.
That is like,
guys,
that's a straight up con reference.
It's a reference to a fan question at one of the two Ruby panels last year.
At RTX.
The deepest of cuts.
Wow, well done.
So yeah, let's talk about Ranch Hand a little bit. Because not gonna lie,
literally.
When he first pulled the little doodad to start up his arm, there's a part of me that really hoped it was going to be a chainsaw. That part,
your face lit up.
It did. Anybody who knows me knows I wanted it in my heart of hearts to be a chainsaw. However, what we got instead, old-timey extendable robot arm, was pretty darn cool.
It's pretty solid. It also showed us the limits of technology and how this was out there. Like, this wasn't just like, oh yeah, you know, one of the Smithco Extendo Grabo Robo arms. No, this was something that this guy made, and it's sort of the beginning of what we're going to see of these assassins, mercs, all what is going to make these sort of episodic, what's the word I'm looking for? Either way, like
a villain
of the week sort of a thing of what's the power that the Nomad has to get through. And I hope that they play with that formula too. But ultimately, I thought the Ranch Hand was a good first villain.
Well, and we got a little bit of world building there too. Where'd you get it? Oh, up by the Iron Ridge. It's by, what was it, Softtooth?
I believe it was the Iron Border and Tame Tooth.
Tame Tooth?
Tame Tooth, yeah.
Okay.
I'm good at everything today. I was close.
But yeah.
I tried, and therefore no one can criticize me.
There's a place called the Iron Border where I think, yeah, we can assume that that's probably the heart of industry of this wasteland or civilization. But yeah, Mark, you bring up an excellent point. With just one quick visual, it says everything about the level of technology of where the world is at. Mm. And it says a lot about the limitations of all that, but also the imagination that goes into it. The fact that he has to pull a cord to start up the motor on his arm.
Where's the gas tank in his arm?
Not just that, but we, like, the companion B storyline of this was about how gas is starting to become a little bit more
difficult
to find. And so here's somebody who's dependent on this, kind of in a Mad Maxian sort of way. Now for more reason than one, by the end of the episode, he's severely out of business. And that's another piece of world building that subtly shows you that, I don't know, this world is dying, or these resources are getting a lot harder to come by. And what does that mean for the world at large? And what will that mean? What will the Nomad have to do, or what will the world have to do in order to fix it?
That is a good point. Yeah, that in the entire Beast storyline is all about the dwindling resources of the world, and we'll get to that when we get there. But yeah, I feel like you hit it spot on. I can't. Sorry, I keep just thinking about like this menacing Western desperado mercenary in like the cloak and the hat with the deep voice that Ian Sinclair provided, and he was phenomenal with it. But just having to sit there and start up his arm, one, first and foremost, it's an adorable visual. And then after he kidnaps Barty and uses him as leverage against the sheriff, sits there and goes, anyone know any jokes?
It's like, see, those are all the jokes I know. I wasn't expecting you to actually stick around for the showdown. Nothing else to do. It's a very small town. Entertainment is hard to come by. So, yeah, of course we're going to say the fact that he felt the need to entertain them.
Hey, it's an opportunity to workshop like his type 5, I suppose.
Jeez. Really quickly, One Dumb Gamer, that's their name, not saying it. One Dumb Gamer asks, what's on the other side that they needed to make a massive iron border? Like, why? What makes the iron necessary?
I'm wondering if the iron border isn't necessarily a construct, but a place where they get iron. Like, if it's a huge iron vein, that's the border of the country or the kingdom or the whatever.
Because it couldn't necessarily be a wall. It could be a chasm.
That's true.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't necessarily think of it. Granted, we know nothing about it. But yeah, it could just very well be a kingdom borderline. Mm. It might not be anything menacing like the wall in Game of Thrones. But it really could go either way in this world.
Cam Griffin says the Iron Border is a dam, and no one in nowhere knows what a dam really is or what it houses. El Rey protects that secret. Now, El Rey, now I've talked a lot about, you know, divination when it comes to rulers. So in the case of El Rey, if he's looking for that sort of divine approval, it could be a goddamn.
Ba-dum-tish.
You laughed at a pun.
Steve, you need to have
Steve's had a long day.
You need to have the drum roll on standby.
Hey, it's fine. AJ the Edgelord also says it's Ironwood's man cave. Next up, Fort Port.
Yes, absolutely.
The chat's on fire today.
There's a lot of really good stuff in here.
You guys are on point. Well done.
The time delay is starting to catch up.
Yeah.
So, yep. Yeah, I love, not to harp on it too much, but yeah, I do love the visual aesthetic of his robot arm. I love the technological limitation. And I love that we can be steampunk in this Western world in a way that feels unique. It doesn't look like that typical, like, New England steampunk. I like the Western fantasy steampunk aesthetic. Mm. I appreciate it. And it is very reminiscent of Trigun.
Seriously,
Trigun.
Just the more that we watch this episode, the more that I sit there and go, oh yeah, there was the one episode where the bounty hunter that came to town had the Inspector Gadget arms, and there was this, and there were children involved, and oh damn, like that's the more that I that I watch this show, the more that I'm like, Trigun vibes, so many Trigun vibes, all ages Trigun vibes. This is gonna murder me by the time the show is over.
I believe there was one Trigun bounty hunter where literally his jaw was just this giant metal thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I hope we get to see more of that, but. Yeah, he kidnaps Barty, and so the sheriff has to beg because the deputy is indisposed.
Yeah.
Oh, poor deputy. Child.
Bless that.
He's indisposed.
Human.
The sheriff has to go over to the Nomad and kind of beg him to come back so he can turn him over to the bounty hunter. I really liked this interaction, for one, because we immediately see that the Nomad is reluctant to use magic in the wake of getting run out of town, to the point where he's so lonely and he wants friends, and he stops himself and instead just tries to amuse himself with little rocks, and it doesn't work.
It's like the opposite of the Grinch.
Yeah.
Where he stands in a hill or a mountaintop escape to enjoy the company of the people down below as opposed to loathe it.
Oh. And he draws little pictures on the side of the cave, and he scratches out the picture of Barty, but the picture of Toth and Scout are still there. So he's like, I'm making a catalog of all my friends. Oh, I got run out of town. I can't be friends with them anymore.
Sad. And it is amazing to see what how they're still pushing non-communicative interaction with the Nomad and the world and with the other characters. I was wondering how long it was gonna last before it got maybe a little bit too tired, but it's still working for me.
I honestly think the sound design is what really helps with that, especially around the Nomad. Just all the different little sound effects they use, how they use them, they're all very carefully chosen. That it's just incredible. You know, the first time you watch it, it's like, oh, okay, this is great. And then like the second and third and fourth time you watch an episode, and yes, I have watched this one that many times. It's like, oh, and the way they use this particular sound effect, and there's this bell versus this bell, and then there's this, and coupled with the animation. Whoever does the sound design on this show just...
Yeah.
My gosh.
We'd really like to talk to the crew. Eddie.
Hey! Al.
Some of the comments that I got last week were like, Al was really weirded out by hearing his name on the show. It's like, why? Why the hell not? But either way, like, I wonder if it is sound design or how... I miss old school Foley, and there's so much that goes into it that I would highly doubt that Rooster Teeth invested in like old school Foley. But then again, we know next to nothing about the development and creation of the show. So
yeah,
the fact that it is so old timey, classic cartoony.
Beautiful. I mean, it was only announced like what, 2 months before it premiered that it was even happening at all.
By the way, this exists.
This entire series has been a delightful surprise. But yeah, just the little sound cues, they immediately inform you whether or not he's deflated or frustrated or sad or excited. Like, just those little sound cues is great. I have a buddy who's a Foley artist. I'll have to ask her take on this series because, yeah, it's so on point.
Eddie's in chat.
Oh, hello, Eddie. Oh, hi, Eddie. Anytime you want to call in, we'd love to have you.
Like, if you're not busy right now.
Seriously.
I can give you
kidding.
Our studio number on Twitter.
Slide into our DMs. We're not actually kidding.
But I... I really appreciated the way he interacted with the sheriff, because I thought that there are lots of shows, especially shows skewed towards a little bit younger viewers, where I feel like the sheriff would have deceived the nomad to get him to go back into town. But he does the exact opposite. He tells him the truth. He tells them what the situation is. And he tells him how best to take advantage of the situation so that both the nomad can go free and they get the bounty hunter out of their town.
Yeah.
I appreciate him.
The sheriff knows that the nomad isn't a bad person. It's just he's way too much trouble to have around. And so that's kind of why they threw him out in the first place. Like, nope, can't deal with this.
Yeah, it seemed like the sheriff was more, you know, he's got a young child. They're very low on resources. And here's this guy that can create life and took one of the biggest things in the town, brought it to life, and then it got angry. So for the sake of his town, I think ultimately he did make the right decision, and yeah, we did get a little bit more of that in his like, I'm sorry. So I really come to like the sheriff, and not just because he's voiced by Adam Ellis, but I really liked his redemption, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah, he's very human. We've come across very few caricatures in this show so far. Most of the characters that we have do seem like people. And I would posit Red Manuel and the Dawn as the two exceptions to that rule.
Yeah, and even that, you know, I'm willing to put a pin in those two personalities too.
Till we see more than just Red Manuel will take care of this.
because being loud and charismatic doesn't mean you're two dimensional.
Charismatic is debatable. I don't know.
I'm pretty two dimensional.
That's incorrect. You're a whole three dimensional.
I'm a paper man.
Oh, that joke fell so flat.
Hey.
You're three dimensional. You're in the same space as us.
Don't ruin it for the folks at home. It's like it cuts to each individual shot and I'm just in a completely different poses than
you. This is the paper craft, Mark.
Podcast listeners.
I can't. I'm not moving, but I'm breathing.
We'll just get a cardboard cutout and like superimpose it.
Cam Griffin in chat says, who would have thought Cardin Winchester's voice would bring us such a likable, humanized authority figure?
Oh, that's so true.
We call that range.
So, yeah, we finally get the an outright confrontation from the nomad. Like, when Toth and Scout sort of invaded his oasis that he was in, I feel like that was less of a confrontation on his part and more just kind of running around and panicking. But here he actually comes to meet the ranch hand face to face, which, by the way, if that's not a Lawnmower Man joke, I will both be disappointed and also not disappointed, but I feel like it's a Lawnmower Man joke.
Lawnmower Man was something so completely different, but anyone who grew up with a pull cord mower, like, that's just what you immediately associate it with. It's either a boat or a lawnmower if it's got a pull cord on an engine.
For reals.
And how weird is it that people or kids are growing up in a world without those, and it's just kind of like, tick. Don't know the anguish of, like, if it was that easy, I would have mowed the lawn all the time as a kid. But no, you just have to sit out there and just pull. Like, I can't imagine.
For like 10 minutes at a time, yeah, with my scrawny little arms.
I never had to mow a lawn. I have brothers.
Well,
I had brothers too. I had to mow the lawn.
Equality.
And smooth out the dirt path that was our driveway when it got too rocky.
See, I took care of the cat. That was my responsibility as a kid.
Did the cat have a pull cord?
No.
Okay.
Well, it did. It's called a tail. Anyway,
they
so
don't
we
appreciate we, those.
We get an old-fashioned standoff between the ranch hand and the nomad.
We're still talking about the cat for a second.
The scene in the bar, I think, was my favorite, because every time I sit there and I watch two bottles of liquor deck one another and then fall off the bar, and it's just beautiful. It's this wonderfully stereotypical little bar fight in miniature, and it's ridiculous. And the fact that these two things came to life and immediately started wailing on each other is just like, I'm in. This is ridiculous. Sign me up.
Even more so with the nomad being a silent character, having a physical embodiment, like this, there's so much, not just prop comedy, but physical comedy bits of, it seems like the writer's room, and you can confirm or deny, nobody particularly watching the show right now, this is kind of an excuse or a reason to go, you know what'd be funny? which is kind of what you want to see for, like, this is something that doesn't exist that has been in the back of my head that I want to see exist, and seeing a bar fight at its most basic.
Two bottles of liquor fighting each other.
You have so many elements of a bar that are starting to fight back, because you can imagine how many, it's a Western town, how many tussles and scrapes and scraps can you see on a given time. The whole fight scene was really fun, but I still feel bad for, this is well, for us it's 2 weeks, but for the past couple of days for this town, not great. Not great.
I mean, the mill came to life and ran through the ranch hand and the nomad skirmish, demolished several buildings. It definitely put the saloon out of commission for a little bit, and it definitely wrecked the jail and the sheriff's probably office.
Okay, but they fixed the jail.
Yeah.
Now we saw him fixing the jail at the end.
That's true.
That shows you how corrupt of a town it is. They fixed the jail first.
Just in case the ranch hand comes back, but seeing that his hand is chasing him like Sonic the Hedgehog, I don't think that's going to happen. A
little bit of world building, too. The nomad can't he can't use his magic on an object that is actually an extension of someone's being, it looks like.
Mm. Which, good, because that is a gateway to some serious horror if it weren't the case.
Bloodbending.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Which, again, raises the question of whether or not, like, it's good to see the limitations of his magic, and it makes me wonder if there's black magic in this world, or there's some sort of dark magic equivalent that crosses those lines.
Opposite.
And that's why there's no magic anymore.
All magic is bad. Goodbye. Well, some of it is. No, all magic is bad. Goodbye.
But just the personality of the ranch hand after his arm got detached and having to remember which arm to indicate things with.
Like, I kind of wish that the piano was still around to give us a little bit, like, old-timey fun background.
The piano has been thinking.
Yeah, they've all been thinking. Everything thinks. But also, like, in terms of being connected to their being, that's a great thing to establish, not just for that, but then they're... I like how they don't explicitly say things, but they establish a thing that you think about and can establish in your own head and make sense to sort of create your own headcanon. That's the mark of a good writer. Not just saying that.
Contextualizing without exposition.
Exactly. But in terms of, like, something that I could expect in this world would be the nomad clapping somebody's clothes alive for them to run off, and then somebody's naked and has to run away. Like, that's a good visual gag for me. But if they're trying to keep this GPG, then they can't. You can't do that.
Yeah.
You can't do implied nudity or, like, show a butt. But so it implies that by showing that, oh, well, if it's connected to a person, you can't.
Well, and another interesting bit is, again, with the visuals and with the sound cues, they're indicating that the nomad was not aware that that's how it worked. So he's just as clueless about his powers and the limitation of his abilities as we, the audience, which says that, you know, he really has been in an isolated state where he hasn't had a lot of opportunities to interact with the rest of the world and really learn how it goes.
And that also means that we as the audience are learning along with him.
Mm-hmm. That makes for a lot of opportunities for dramatic irony.
And Bekalai and One Dumb Gamer both suggested, imagine, clap on, your heart grows little googly eyes and tries to escape your chest.
Oh no!
I needed that.
I definitely need that. Do we have any final thoughts on this segment of the episode before we move on over into the other section of the episode?
It was beautiful, and I loved it.
Nice to see the kids again.
Absolutely.
And I wonder if we do move on, like, if slash when, because we are moving on from this town, if we'll ever see them again.
And I'm very amused that the nomad still considers Scout Toth and Red Man Well to be his friends.
considering that they made it to the chalk portrait gallery and weren't scribbled out.
Talking about little tiny character bits that are just absolutely precious. The sign that Barty and his friends made for the cave where the nomad was hanging out was "Keep out unless you can positively contribute to Bliss Hill." And it was like, oh, that's so sweet.
These kids are the future.
Oh, they're so cute. So yeah, that segment was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And do you guys want to have fun, learn, grow in all areas of your life? Well, for those of you who do, we've got a podcast for you. Conversations with Maria Menounos, podcast edition, is hosted by our AfterBuzz TV founder and drops every Friday on iTunes. Conversations with Maria Menounos features celebrity and influencer interviews, along with secrets and tips on how to be better in all aspects of life, from health and wellness to career and relationships, finances, and more. Let our Maria be the big sister you've always wanted. Just go to iTunes and subscribe to Conversations with Maria Menounos for free. Be sure to rate and comment, and when you do, let Maria know it was us, namely the Rooster Teeth Reviews, Nomad of Nowhere After Show, that sent you there. Conversations with Maria Menounos, podcast edition. Check it out.
Yeah, actually, I got to talk to Maria today and over WrestleMania weekend.
Oh, fun!
Yeah, nice. she does a lot of great work with the WWE, both charity, and she hosts their red carpet for the Hall of Fame. But she really is like active in making sure that that people are enjoying the show. So if you do listen to it, send her some feedback at her Twitter account at Maria Menounos. She is a wonderful boss to have.
Yeah, she's a fantastic mentor, and we would not be able to be here to talk about the shows that we love if it was not for her support and continued mentorship. Guys, it really means a lot when you guys go and support the people who support us. So thank you so much. And also, really quickly, I want to talk to you guys about iTunes. Folks, thank you so much to everybody who's gone to iTunes to rate, subscribe, leave a comment. We love hearing from you, and it is the best way to let our aforementioned producers know that you guys like the show that we're putting on. We don't have any new reviews this week, but if you guys do leave a review, we will give you a shout out on the show. So please show us some love.
But in lieu of that, last week we called for some subscribers to our YouTube channel, and we got a lot of folks. We passed 100 subscribers last week because everybody was coming by.
And that's for specifically our Rooster Team YouTube channel.
ABTV Rooster Team. We posted the first episode of Welcome to Vail. That's where we'll be posting subsequent episodes of Welcome to Vail. I'm trying to, I think these were all during the show, but I'll say them anyway really quick. HG Lunas, Temptations Piper, Imperial Waltz, Ninetale Phoenix, D Baker, Pepsi Fan 24, Cam Griffin, Elizabeth Ernzen, Evan Brown, Sean Wadey, Chris T75, Jif Fighter, I hope I said that right, Cole Tiger, and that was it, because the next one is, wow, congratulations on crossing 100 subscribers. So, thank you to everybody who did subscribe. I'll say it. We said it before and I'll say it again. We want to put another episode of Welcome to Vail out before the end of April. It's now about half past April. So we're sort of tightening up the next episode, and we're going to get it out to you. And it might sound a little different in terms of some presentational stuff because we're going to be recording it from home instead of live here. But hopefully that means that it'll be a quality product for you, the viewer.
And guys, we can't tell you how excited we are that we get the opportunity to do this, and that's all because of your support, so thank you so, so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go ahead and switch gears and talk about Toth and Scout's storyline in this episode, because as we mentioned last week, Toth now has to prove herself to Dawn Paragon before she gets the chance to go after the Nomad again. And so what we see is her essentially being kind of demoted to errand girl. And so she gets sent out to this oil rig to trade oil for water. Mm-hmm. And what they find is that the rig is busted and that they don't really have enough to properly trade for both the water that they're coming to trade for and the crops that they kind of need to live.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have here is Scout, you know, fixing the oil rig, and everything else that transpires after that is all sort of world and character building. Again, kind of talk. This side of things was a little bit more expositional, but it was kind of welcome exposition. What was your guys' favorite sort of revelation from our time here?
I joked about it before, but I do like how we're learning how complex the relationship between Dom Perignon and the El Rey is with the community and the Outer Rim, as it were. And we have really seen nothing but desolate desert and.
With the exception of the lush, verdant paradise that we burned down in episode one. I'm never going to get over that. Never going to get over that.
And who knows how one in a million that place was. But we still really don't... What we're getting of the world is it's just bad. Everything is going to hell in a handbasket. And there's not too much that we can do. And... Because we're looking a little bit deeper than just sitting back and enjoying it, and it is made a little bit obvious, they're sort of teasing that the Nomad will have something in bringing back giving life to what's dead, mm-hmm. and if the planet actually does die,
he can clap his hands and googly eyes will appear on the planet.
But then it might it'll roll around the galaxy and
it'll be Mogo.
Yeah, it'll be the Green Lantern. It'll be the Green Lantern.
But no, you bring up a great point. I definitely was spitballing it a little bit, but it could be that the Nomad is passively a magical creature that just exudes life around him everywhere he goes, and so that's why it wasn't like the Oasis was there when he hunkered down 100 years ago. It could be that that place was just as desolate until he came there, and then this place just by him passively being there kind of emerged from just being around him. Mm-hmm. So that's entirely possible. And him going on a journey across the land, you know, maybe life will kind of sprout up in his wake as he goes across the land. We don't really know.
We've got a keyboard now.
So we do.
No worries.
No worries.
Shout out to our audio listeners.
But
so,
yeah,
real quick in chat, we have, and I just lost him. Where did he go? Gil Calcetta, who, according to his Twitter profile, is a 2D animator for Rooster Teeth.
No, you've seen Gil before. Hello. Have you ever watched an RTAA where there's a man dressed in a nice suit with, like, a coif of hair and a goatee? That's Gil.
Oh, that's wonderful.
He's been putting himself in RTAAs for a while now. He was the one that commented on our show last week about mentioning Al. Hi, Gil. If you're not busy either, we're starting to make a list, so just contact us. We'll actually, you know what? We should have an off-season RTAA episode. We really should.
Oh, that would be so
Slide
fun.
Slide into our DMs, dude.
Oh, God, there's so much to talk about.
But yeah, absolutely. Our people will call your people. It'll be great. We'll do lunch. It'll be great.
Just DM us.
Or DM us, either one. But yeah, we it could be that the Nomad, I feel like it's no secret that the Nomad is going to be the key to restoring the world to what was either its former glory or at least giving life back to what seems to be dying or mm-hmm. dead. Oh, you know what this is?
What about his little glowing chest?
Oh,
this little glowing part of his chest.
He did a good deed.
It gives a lot of credence to the 100 good deeds for Eddie McDowd theory.
Maybe. Guys, we didn't even kind of, because the Nomad is so sweet and so genuine, I don't think we ever kind of touched on this is better for predictions. I'm sorry, guys, but I have to talk about it now before I lose it. What if the Nomad was a bad guy? What if he was a monster? And someone decided to punish him by stripping him of most of his powers and most of his memories.
We go full Darth Revan.
Yeah. Yeah. What if he was a Darth Revan? Like the Western Darth Revan. And he won't get his memory or his powers back until he redeems himself.
Hmm. Oh. And then destroys the Earth.
Oopsies.
But it's one of those things where, like we talked about it for Ruby. Like, what if Cinder wakes up with no memory but has no idea that she has all this power? And this is actually Cinder's story. No. Well, she's in the wasteland with the relic because the relic was in that, like, sand waste area? No, it's not that at all.
Maybe that's why the Nomad wears a little handkerchief and the big old hat was because he's self-conscious about the scars.
Maybe.
Ooh.
Not a bit.
Not a bit.
Hashtag not a bit.
That wasteland just has a back door somewhere that, like, Nomad leans in. What is going on here? And it's the... Yep.
But anyway,
I am down for weird dimensional shenanigans. Sorry. The next relic is hidden on Sidewinder.
Back to Toth and Scout. Something we should point out is that we get a little bit more information about Toth's backstory, namely her lineage. She is a member of the Yadala, which seems to be a race of people on this planet, I guess.
Let's go with planet.
In this nation. And
microcosm.
I'm going to assume that they are a Native American analog. That is my assumption. I could be completely wrong on that.
They also have pointy ears.
Is that just him? Or
no,
or no
it's
no.
both of them.
Oh. Ooh. I didn't notice that.
Took me until my fourth watch to go, wait a minute.
Faunus?
Or like like a mestizo?
A mestizo?
Mestizo. I looked it up just to be sure, and I was right in my head. It's a term traditionally used in Spain, Latin America, and to a lesser extent in the Philippines, which originally meant a person of combined European and American Indian descent, regardless of where the person was born.
That might be Possibly. It, too. So, yeah, we don't quite know the full context of that, but we can assume that there are people who fall into that category in this world, and that all of Toth's actions, presumably, at least from Scout's point of view, is that, like, everything she's done is justified in her own mind because she's doing it for the Yadala. Now, whether, I feel like, that's definitely going to come to a head at some point in time because rules are rules versus the actual morality of the situation versus the need for the greater good for her people. Mm. Like, all of that's going to come to a head at some point.
And at that point, you have to wonder just how lawful good is she?
Rules are rules.
I think it's going to...
Because she knows that she cares.
Yeah.
So.
And it's definitely being tested now and seeing Scout... react so appropriately, but just total attention.
I love that Scout immediately is like the mediator. She's like, we can fix this, like, because she has so much admiration for Toth, but at the same time she understands that Toth's methods are a little blunt, so she's like, hey, we can fix this, we don't have to necessarily take a hammer to every situation, or in Toth's case an axe. But I love Toth here too, because she is shown as very human when the people who are there break down because their colleague or family member, it's never really fully established, like when they talk about him being dead. She feels reacts emotionally. She's not a robot or a callous villain. She is very human in that, like, how do I react in this situation? This is immediately emotionally uncomfortable and I don't know what to do. So it's nice to see different sides of her.
Agreed.
Yeah, because, like, on one hand, there's that human empathy, and on the other hand, it's like, I have a job to do.
I have a job to do.
I'm not involved in this.
And then, of course, when the wheel barrels through, everything in her probably wants to just drop all this nonsense and go chase it, but those are not her orders, and she has to prove herself before she gets a chance to go after the Nomad again.
Well, too bad. Because our old boy, the mill wheel... came rolling through and was like, son of a bitch. And screw it.
I really, really want that wheel to be a fixture. I want to just occasionally see it go by, like roll off into the sunset or just go by in the background
somewhere.
How have
we
not
opened
everywhere
with Roland yet?
Oh, Rawhide?
Yeah.
Theme from Rawhide? Have to be the Blues Brothers version. But the thing... That I want from that, in terms of the payoff of that, is we got episode one with its creation and the silliness and funniness of it. We've got episode two with it coming back and being an indicator for it. Comedic rule of threes, doesn't come back till the end of the season and takes out a major enemy.
Takes out the big
possibly
bad.
El Rey. Possibly El Rey.
No. Red Manuel.
Yeah. Like, Red Manuel would
that's
work.
That's a fitting
like
end.
A Red Manuel way to go.
But wait, wasn't Red Manuel with the party that saw it?
No. No, he's off doing his own
thing. Okay, he's doing his own thing. He's off looking for the Nomad.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, then yes, I think then Red Manuel will be good. If not, Dom Pedagon or you know, somebody. One of the villains that we will come to know.
One of the villains who deserves a cartoonishly funny way to go.
if not a death, just take them out.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Just knock them down.
To die. This is a cartoon.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I at this point, I am expecting Red Manuel to get run over then.
Yeah, if it doesn't happen, I'll be a little disappointed. But the other bit of information that we get is that Scout, she grew up on a place where oil rigs seem to be a regular fixture, to the point where she knows how to make repairs. And that makes me think that her family was probably in the similar situation that this family is in. And I don't know. Scout seems awfully young to be out on her own.
She doesn't strike me as young so much as just naive.
Mm. I don't know.
Young at heart.
I don't know. That. She's very
inexperienced.
Tiny. That's true.
We've seen people of a lot of various size around.
That's very true.
Yeah.
But yeah. Point being is she grew up on an oil rig, and as we establish in this episode, as is just true in real life, those are notoriously dangerous. And I wonder if there's not a sort of tragic backstory there.
Oh, there's probably a tragic.
I'm sure we'll see something.
And before we get too far away from it, the thing that made me giggle was Manuel got run over by a mill wheel.
Chasing down the Nomad.
Walking home from Don Paragon's oasis. I don't know.
Merry Christmas, y'all.
Merry Christmas. So, yeah, I feel like that just about does it for this episode. Do we have any final thoughts on this episode before we move into some news and gossip?
I enjoyed this a lot. This has been one of my favorites so far. And I realize we've only had 3 episodes, but nonetheless.
I'm legitimately excited for the next episode because being away all weekend, like I was ready to watch it on Friday, but it got delayed till Saturday. And then finally seeing what like the thumbnails are on the new In Improved Rooster Teeth website, I'm super excited to see what happens from it. And excited for possible musical choices next week. I will say before we get away from Nomad of Nowhere, hey, we're going to have a pretty exciting episode in a couple weeks. That's all I have liberty to say.
Yay, indeed. Okay, yeah, this episode was just on point and delightful, and I'm really looking for... I love the bits of character building and world building that we're getting, and I'm looking forward to the next one. All right, let's go ahead and dig on into some news and gossip.
AfterBuzz TV News.
If you weren't already aware... 4 days until Red versus Blue finally comes back.
The Shizno Paradox.
But they dropped that teaser.
I am beyond excited.
How are you feeling, Mark?
What the hell's going on?
We made time travel a legitimate plot device last season. Admittedly, it's universe-breaking, but we did it!
I mean, but technically it's been a plot device in season 3, but that's neither.
Okay, but actual
God, that was
time
season
travel.
3? I was so young then.
Gamma, though.
15 years.
Welcome back to hell, Gary.
Excite.
Excite.
I'm so excited.
Very excited. We mentioned last week that the Rooster Teeth documentary, celebrating those 15 years, is coming out later this month. That date is actually April 20th, so we will be able to see that soon, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Meg Turney is going to be back at RTX this year, so guys, that'll be a treat for all of you who are big fans of hers.
It will. She usually, the past couple of years, she's been doing a neon cat meetup. Where she just says all of the people cosplaying as a neon cat show up. And we were so busy last year, I saw her as she was walking out of the convention. But yeah, I'm happy to see her back at RTX.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. And guys, a new show kind of dropped today on the Rooster Teeth website. It's called Skilltree.
Yes.
Mark, can you... Because I hadn't heard anything about this prior.
Did any of y'all watch Bernie's vlogs?
Not really. I'm not a big vlog person.
So near the tail end of the vlogs, Bernie, or there was, it was an employee review that he had with his assistant Ellie, and it was like, all right, do you think that you could, you could be my bodyguard in a terrifying situation, or to properly know how to react in a zombie apocalypse, or this or that. So there were a couple of weeks where Bernie was really busy or off shooting Laser Team 2 or whatever, where Ellie would be like learning how to shoot like a sniper rifle, or doing Krav Maga, or just like bodyguard things as opposed to just like assistant things. And those seem to have gone over so well that they've turned it into a series.
That's awesome. That series,
I just love the title, though.
Skill Tree. Yeah, I think that's super cool. And I definitely understand why people responded positively to that. Because rather than being a normal assistant, actually being able to, like, lethally take out somebody.
Being combat ready.
Oh.
And if you haven't seen Ellie on anything, she is an amazing personality. And I highly recommend, if you see an RT podcast with her on it, check it out. Go back and watch. She did $1 million Butt recently, or it was million pounds. However, which is when they were in RTX London. But Ellie is a great personality, a wonderful addition to the on-screen cast of Rooster Teeth. We can fit out the music since this is kind of going to be the last thing. People in chat were talking about it, and we're still working on it because Nomad and RVB are going to be running at the same time. We're still figuring out a proper schedule. Now, despite Stacey not being able to come in the past couple of weeks, she doesn't watch RVB. And we're not going to throw 15 seasons of TV at her to catch up in a week.
That's so much.
Yeah.
I wanted to, but we decided it was infeasible.
So regardless, we're still figuring out what our schedule is going to be. We're not going to be doing multiple shows in one episode, because that then isolates a part of the audience that may only come here for Nomad of Nowhere, or may only come here for RVB. So sort of like what we've been doing the past couple of weeks, we're still going to feature RT News every week, depending on whatever's going on.
Whatever's newsworthy.
But in terms of our coverage, we're probably going to be splitting up between RVB 1 week, a couple of episodes, Nomad of Nowhere, another week, a couple of episodes.
Yeah.
Per usual, we're going to be on public release schedule.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go back in the way back machine, we used to cover 2 Ruby episodes in one after show.
And four RVBs.
So we're thinking like 2 per is probably manageable, but
especially since the episodes are getting longer.
Yeah. We're still working it out. We will definitely keep you all posted, and thank you all so much for asking and for being curious about how the schedule is going to work. It means a lot that you guys want to be able to tune in to talk live in the live chat and hang out with us,
and it's been super active, and we've been getting the fact that we've had folks from RT back in the chat is something that feels good again.
It does. Delightful. Thank you guys so much. Katie, where can people go if they want to find you?
You can follow me all over the social medias, as well as on YouTube and Twitch at Kiaxet. That is K-I-A-X-E-T. If you would like to see our reactions to this episode, that lives on the YouTube channel. I know it got copyright blocked yesterday, but it's back up today.
Mark, where can people go?
Find me on Twitter at Mark Bidonica. I did just a lot of social media posting over the weekend at WrestleMania if you want to see some dumb, silly things that I got to do, including not understanding Bourbon Street. Please, find me on Twitter at Mark Bidonica, Instagram at the same place. Movie Trivia Schmodown over on Collider. I had a match this past Friday, and I also did an interview with the fine folks over there, which aired on the SK Plus channel. Wrestling, go to Xbox 12360 or the NXT After Show on AfterBuzz TV. Wrestling. If you're a fan of Critical Role, say hi, Mark, in chat tomorrow, and I might see it, because that's where I'll be. And then Monday nights, Inventory Full PT on Twitch. We've got some big plans coming up, and we actually might be getting a budget soon.
Ooh.
So we might be able to actually do some more stuff than just talking at your faces and playing video games. But who knows? Megan, how about you?
Well, don't forget, you guys can follow Stacey at Stacey Shuttles on Twitter. You can also follow our other teammate, Patrick, at P to the D's on Twitter. And you can follow me on Twitter at The Menguin. That's T-H-E-M-E-N-G-U-I-N. I do lots of stuff. Don't worry about it. Thank you guys so much for watching. We will see you all next week.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.